KMXT in Kodiak. This is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, lots of news about hatchery fish, frankenfish, and tsunami fish. Also, a request to stop draking in Unalaska Bay. All that and more coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
The village of Iggy-Ogig has been awarded $392,500 from the U.S. Department of Energy to make improvements on a hydropower system that could replace the use of diesel fuel for the town of 70 on Lake Iliamna. KDLG's Hannah Colton has more about this renewable energy and what it could mean to the salmon that swim by every summer.
The RivGen power system, developed by the Ocean Renewable Power Company, has been successfully tested in the Quijack River outside of the village of Iggy-Ogig for the past two summers. But there are logistical challenges, and the village plans to use this new grant money to continue tweaking the system to make it easier and cheaper to operate. One challenge is that the turbines must be taken out of the river each spring while the ice flows out. Iggy-Ogig Village Council President Alexana Salmon says that used to be a predictable two-week window, but now the warmer winters are disrupting that schedule.
Like right now, we're 40 degrees in the beginning of March, and this is often our coldest month, so there's no ice out in the lake, and last winter we had two ice breakups, so we wanted to study more on ice to see how it interacts with the device, if it's possible to keep the device in, you know, if minimal ice is flowing down the river.
Another environmental factor the village is concerned with, says Salmon, is having the turbines in the water when the young salmon are going out.
The device was installed at the peak of the salmon, sockeye salmon return last summer, and over a million swam by it, and there was no harm to fish. So we know that the adult salmon are in the clear. So this would be focusing on out-migrating salmon smolts and ice formation and movement.
The third round of testing, along with the new smolt research, will begin this summer. The Department of Energy has approved the nearly $400,000 for the first phase of the project, and the village could be selected to receive up to $1.1 million more in funding. Eventually, the village aims to supply 100% of its energy needs using two of the RivGen units. In Dillingham, I'm Hannah Colton.
The new executive director of the Southern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association gave an overview of the organization, which operates multiple salmon hatcheries, during last week's Ketchikan Chamber of Commerce lunch. David Landis started his new position in December and says he's happy to be in a job where jeans are acceptable work clothes. He says he's also happy to work for an organization that has a positive impact on the region's economy. SSRAA has been operating five hatcheries from just south of Ketchikan to the Petersburg area. Those are Whitman Lake, Deer Mountain, Neats Bay, Burnett Inlet, and Crystal Lake. This year, it will add two more at Klawock River and Port St. Nicholas. The association also has rearing and release sites at Kendrick Bay, Nacta Inlet, Anita Bay, Neck Lake, and City Creek, and this year we'll add Carroll Inlet. The Deer Mountain Hatchery, which is actually located within City Park next to Ketchikan Creek, was added to SSRAA's lineup just a couple of years ago, and Landis says it will specialize in Chinook. Many will be taken to Carroll Inlet for rearing and release, but about 100,000 will be released right there in Ketchikan Creek.
And they'll be coming back in these nice big kings in the middle of town, so that'll be interesting for folks to see. And hopefully at some point they'll be able to open up a fishery there. There's been dip net fisheries and so on in the past.
The association's hatcheries rear different species of Pacific salmon to the juvenile stage and then release millions of the young fish into the region's waterways. Landis compared the survival rates in the wild versus hatcheries. He says in nature, 90% of salmon eggs do not survive. In hatcheries, 90% do. Landis adds that even after the eggs have hatched, SSRAA's fish continue to have an extremely high survival rate. That changes, of course, once the juveniles are released into nature.
Now, when they're released, they have a pretty tough existence for the first month or so until they get way offshore, and there are a lot of the mortality occurs at that point.
Landis says the mortality rate is about 7% daily for the first 30 days after release. Those that survive come back as adults and enhance the fisheries, both commercial and sport, throughout the region. The association is funded by a 3% tax that commercial fishermen imposed upon themselves. The association employs about 35 people year-round. That bumps up to about 50 when the season becomes more active. In response to a question from the audience, Landis noted the difference between hatchery and farmed salmon. He says hatchery salmon are coddled up to a point, but then are released to fend for themselves when they're about the size of a human finger. He says those that survive essentially become wild salmon after that.
A farmed fish grows its entire life from all the way from an egg to that 10-pound fish inside that net pen. It doesn't have nearly the vitality that a wild fish would have, or, you know, what we're concerned about is the quality of the fish. It's just not nearly the same.
Landis also is the Ketchikan Gateway Borough Mayor, but was not addressing the chamber in that role.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
You're listening to the Alaska Fisheries Report. Hear the show online anytime at kmxt.org. Fishing buoys, fuel drums, even a derelict squid boat were among the tons of debris that have floated into Alaska waters after Japan's 2011 earthquake and tsunami. Now an Oregon aquarium is opening a display of the disaster's living legacy. Northwest News Network correspondent Tom Bonsi reports on some remarkable castaways.
Oregon Coast Aquarium assistant curator Yvonne Moshon-Kalura introduces me to some well-traveled newcomers.
And they're swimming comfortably among the kelp right now.
Yeah, they look right at home here. And just looking at them, they're unusual looking. Not quite tropical, but pretty looking fish and healthy looking.
They each have a beautiful barred pattern on their bodies. So tall vertical stripes that alternate silver and black.
Fittingly, they're called striped beakfish. Then we move to the much larger open sea tank to look for some bigger arrivals, silver torpedoes with deeply forked yellow tails.
School, you'll see that there's a smaller school of larger fish that is staying pretty tight and close, those are the yellowtail jacks.
Aquarium staff rescued more than a dozen jacks and one beakfish from the hull of a derelict boat last April. The half-sunk wreck appeared to have drifted across the Pacific after 2011's big earthquake and tsunami in Japan, and carried the live fish with it.
We don't know how old they are. We don't know how long they were in the hull, but it's possible that they got washed into the boat hull when they were small.
Moshon-Kalura says DNA testing positively identified the now-grown fish as native to East Asian waters. They probably survived by nibbling on sea life that grew inside the hull and whatever else washed in. The long-distance hitchhikers were kept in quarantine for 6 months before being judged safe and suitable to display. Aquarium visitor Nicole Chasen of Portland was suitably amazed.
Well, very surprised that they made their way all the way here. Yeah, and I hope that they're happy and they're being well treated as visitors.
Government agencies and marine biologists up and down the West Coast continue to watch out for more tsunami debris and hitchhikers. John Chapman is a marine expert at Oregon State University. He says Pacific Northwest coastal waters are probably too cold for the fish the aquarium put on display to reproduce, but there are lots of other potential invasive species that worry him.
Yeah, there are real bad characters in that debris,
including sea stars, seaweeds, and parasites that could displace native species. Fortunately, the volume of suspected tsunami debris washing up on our shores has tailed off in the past year. What's left out there is getting harder to distinguish from all the other trash in the ocean. Chapman says it appears we lucked out.
And we still don't have a final answer that we have dodged the bullet. We don't know that yet for sure. But I think as a rough estimate, maybe we did.
The caveat is that it sometimes takes a long time for an invader to become established. So the marine scientists will keep looking. One of the main methods of surveillance is to lower metal or plastic discs in the water to see what grows on them. In addition, trained observers are making periodic checks for sea life that's out of place on the undersides of coastal docks and pilings. The Japanese government donated $3 million to support debris dispersal modeling and coastal monitoring around the Pacific Rim. I'm Tom Bonsi in Newport, Oregon.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
A proposal to permanently close Unalaska Bay to commercial trawl fishing is up for discussion at the Alaska Board of Fisheries meeting happening this week. KUCB's Greta Mart tells us more.
The board is hosting a statewide finfish meeting this week in Anchorage, and Kawalungan Tribal President Tom Robinson is there to testify. He will be speaking on behalf of the Unalaska Native Fishermen's Association, known as UNFA. Robinson says this is UNFA's third attempt since 2008 to get the proposal, numbered 194, passed by the board. In 2013, the Unalaska City Council passed the resolution supporting the plan to close Unalaska Bay to commercial trawl fishing year-round. In that resolution 2 years ago, the council agreed, quote, the influx of trawlers into this very small area during the summer has negatively impacted local residents who are engaged in commercial subsistence and sport fishing activities in the Unalaska Bay area.
194 is going to be a big one for folks.
That's Board of Fisheries spokesman Glenn Haight. UNFA says trawlers have harvested approximately 4 million pounds a year of pollock from Unalaska Bay over the past decade. They say it has become nearly impossible for local fishermen and hunters to feed their families. Besides 194, Haight says that for Aleutian residents, the key proposals up for discussion this week are outlined in the groundfish section of the meeting's roadmap found on the Board of Fisheries website under Meeting Information. One proposal seeks to clarify possession and landing requirements for Pacific cod and walleye pollock. Another seeks to establish new management plans for state waters walleye pollock jig fishery in the Bering Sea Aleutian Islands District, along with other Southwest Alaskan fishing grounds. The Alaska Board of Fisheries is holding its statewide finfish meeting today through Friday at the Anchorage Hilton. Reporting in Unalaska, I'm Greta Mart.
Alaska's congressional delegation has introduced bills last week that would require genetically engineered salmon to go by a market name that includes the terms genetically engineered, or GE. The makers of the Aqua Advantage fish hope to farm the product in Panama and import it into the United States. The fish is a modified Atlantic salmon designed for fast growth. In November, the FDA approved the fish as a safe food, but imports are on hold until the FDA completes labeling guidelines. Senator Lisa Murkowski is the prime sponsor of the legislation, along with the junior senator from Alaska and Maria Cantwell of Washington State. Alaska Congressman Don Young sponsored a House version. The bills also call for an independent study to review the FDA's assessment that the fish would have no significant impact on wild salmon stocks.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you by commercial fishermen for Bristol Bay, permit holders and fishing groups standing together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region.
And that's all for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KDLG's Hannah Colton in Dillingham, KRBD's Layla Carey in Ketchikan, Northwest News Network's Tom Bonsi in Newport, Oregon, KUCB's Greta Mart in Unalaska, and APRN's Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.